The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 6, 1995 at Murari Sevak Farm in Mulberry, Tennessee. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 47, Verse 61.
Translation. The gopis of Vrindavana have given up the association of their husbands, sons and other family members who are very difficult to give up, and they have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Or let him be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers or herbs in Vrindavana, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet.
This verse in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47-61 was spoken by Uddhava. When Uddhava was sent by Krishna to see the condition of the gopis in Vrindavana, he stayed there for a few months and their association always talked with him about Krishna. Although this greatly pleased the gopis and other residents of Vrindavana, Vrajabhumi, Vrindavana, Uddhava saw that the gopis were severely afflicted by their separation from Krishna. Their hearts were so disturbed that their minds were sometimes deranged. Observing the unalloyed devotion and love of the gopis for Krishna, Uddhava desired to become a creeper, a blade of grass, or an herb in Vrindavana, so that sometimes the gopis would trample him and he would receive the dust of the lotus feet on his head. Haridasa Thakur Mahabhagavata Pradhan Proti Dhirna Loi Teho Dhirna Lokho Nam. Haridas Thakur, the teacher of the holy name, is among the most exalted of all devotees. Every day he chants 300,000 holy names of the Lord. Namera Mohimami Tar Tai Sikilu Tar Prasade Name Mohima Janilu. I have learned about the glories of the Lord's holy name from Haridas Thakur, and by His mercy I have understood these glories.
Acharya Ratna Acharya Nidhi Pandita Gadadhar Jagadananda Namodara Shankara Bhakeshwar Kashishwara Mukunda Vasudeva Murari Arajata Bhakta Gana Gaure Avatari Krishna Nama Prema Koila Jagate Prachar Iha Sabar Sange Krishna Bhakti Jayamar. Acharya Ratna Acharya Nidhi Gadadhar Pandit Jagadananda Damodar Sankar Vakeshwar Kashishwara Mukunda Vasudeva Murari and many other devotees have descended in Bengal to preach to everyone the glories of the holy name of Krishna and the value of love for Him. I have learned from them the meaning of devotional service to Krishna.
Vatir hidaye dritho abhimana jani Bangi kori mahaprabhu kohe atobani.
Knowing that Balabha Bhatta's heart was full of pride, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke these words, hinting at how one can learn about devotional service. Purport. Balabha Bhatta was greatly proud of his knowledge in devotional service and therefore he wanted to speak about Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without understanding
the Lord's position. The Lord therefore hinted in many ways. But if Vallabha Bhakta wanted to know what devotional service actually was, he would have to learn from all the devotees he mentioned, beginning with Advaita Acharya, Lord Nityananda, Sarvabhauma Bhatta Acharya, and Ramananda Rai. As Sarup Damodar has said, if one wants to learn the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam, one must take lessons from a realized soul. One should not proudly think that one can understand the transcendental loving service of the Lord simply by reading books. One must become a servant of a Vaishnava. As Narottam Das Thakur has confirmed,
Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nistara Payache Keva.
One cannot be in a transcendental position unless one very faithfully serves a pure Vaishnava. One must accept a Vaishnava Guru.
Ato Gurvasvayam.
And then by questions and answers, one should gradually learn what pure devotional service to Krishna is. That is called the Parampara system.
Ami se Vaishnava Bhakti Siddhanta Sab Jani Ami se Bhagavat Artha Uttama Bhakani.
I am a great Vaishnava, having learned all the conclusions of Vaishnava philosophy. I can understand the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam and explain it very well.
Bhakte monete e chilo dirkho garbho prabhur bhachan suni se hailo karbo.
Such pride had existed for a long time within Vallabha Bhatta's mind, but as he heard the preaching of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his pride was cut down.
Prabhur mukhe vaishnavata suniya sabar bhathe icha hailo tha sabare da dekhi bhar.
When Vallabha Bhatta heard from the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the pure Vaishnavism of all these devotees, he immediately desired to see them.
Bhatta kohi esa Vaishnav rohe kon stane kon prakare paimo iha sabar darsane.
Vallabha Bhatta said, where do all these Vaishnavas live? And how can I see them?
Prabhu kohe kohe keho gore keho desantare sabasi ache rata jatra deki bhare.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, although some of them live in Bengal and some in other states, they all have come here to see the Rath Yatra festival.
Nihai rohen sabe basar nana stane nihai paiva tumi sabar darshane.
At present, they are all living here. Their residences are in various quarters. Here you will get the audience of them all.
Jayo jayo. Sri Chaitanya jayo Nityananda jaya Daita Chanda jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narang Chaiva Narottama.
Narang Chaiva Narottama.
Devim Sarasatim Vyasam. Ato Jaya Mudi Ajay. Pukakaro Divacha Langpangur Langayate Geringyakki Patamahang Bande. Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Padamananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Ishwaram. Vasudeve Bhagavati.
Vasudeve Bhagavati.
Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha.
Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha.
Janayatya Subairagyam.
Janayatya Subairagyam.
Gyanam Yad Brahma Darsanam.
Gyanam Yad Brahma Darsanam.
Vasudeve Bhagavati.
Vasudeve Bhagavati.
Bhakti Yoga Prayojita.
Bhakti Yoga Prayojita.
Janayatya Subairagyam.
Janayatya Subairagyam.
ज्ञानम यद ब्रह्मदर्शनम् वासुदेवे
वासुदेवे
अंतु कृष्णा भगवती
भगवती
the personality of Godhead
the personality of Godhead
bhakti yoga
bhakti yoga
devotional service
devotional service
prayojitah
prayojitah
discharged
discharged
jayanayati
jayanayati
produces
produces
asu
asu
very soon
very soon
vairagyam
vairagyam
detachment
detachment
jnanam
jnanam
knowledge
knowledge
yat
yat
which
ramadarsanam ramadarsanam
self-realization
self-realization
engagement in Krishna consciousness and application of devotional service unto Krishna make it possible to advance in knowledge and detachment as well as in self-realization purport it is said by less intelligent men The bhakti yoga or devotional service is meant for persons who are not advanced in transcendental knowledge and renunciation. But the fact is that if one engages in the devotional service of the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, he does not have to attempt separately to practice detachment or wait for an awakening of transcendental knowledge. It is said that one who engages unflinchingly and the devotional service of the Lord actually has all the good qualities of the devas. Develop in him of the demigods, develop in him automatically. One cannot discover how such good qualities develop in the body of a devotee. But actually it happens. There is one instance where a hunter was taking pleasure in killing animals. But after becoming a devotee, he was not prepared to kill even an ant. Such is the quality of a devotee. Those who are very eager to advance in transcendental knowledge can engage themselves in pure devotional service. Without wasting time in mental speculation, for arriving at the positive conclusions of knowledge and the absolute truth, the word Brahma Darsanam is significant in this verse. Brahma darsana means to realize or to understand the transcendence. One who engages in the service of Vasudeva can actually realize what Brahman is. If Brahman is impersonal, then there is no question of darsanam, which means seeing face to face. Darsanam refers to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Unless the seer and the seen are persons, there is no darsanam. Brahma darshanam means that as soon as one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can at once realize what impersonal Brahman is. A devotee does not need to make separate investigations to understand the nature of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita also confirms this. Brahma bhuvaya kalpate. A devotee at once becomes a self-realized soul in the absolute truth. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to text 23, chapter 32, canto 3 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Entanglement and fruitive activities. Om Tat Sat. So, this is a very nice verse. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayochitaha Janayadhyasu Bhairagyam Jnanam Yad Brahma Darshanam. Early in the first canto, there's a similar verse, and ends Jnanam Yantat Dahaitukam, which means that causelessly one gets Vairagya and Jnana, detachment and transcendental knowledge. In this verse, it says that you not only get Vairagya, renunciation, and Jnanam, spiritual knowledge, but you also can realize the absolute truth face to face. Brahma darsanam. So by performing devotional service, you can get everything. There's no need of performing something else first. It's not that devotional service is dependent upon anything else. Devotional service is self-sufficient, complete. And if we fully perform the devotional service, then we can achieve all these successes. Someone may say, I'm too attached. I can't do devotional service. I'm just too attached. Let me get detached, then I'll do devotional service. But by doing devotional service, someone will become detached. That is the glory of devotional service. You may try to be detached by other means, but then when the push comes to shove, when we're put in a real tight situation, then we find that we become attached. We are actually retaining some attachment, very hard to give up for many. Well, someone who is doing devotional service, as they become attached to Krishna, automatically their detachment to the material world increases. Attachment to this material world is not such as, of course, it's said in one word, vairagya, detachment, ashakti, attachment. But this attachment is very complicated because the desires of someone in the material world are many-branched, as it explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Bahusakhas anantascha. So many branches. Just like if you ever try to uproot a tree, or if you see a tree root structure, it's not that the tree has a simple root structure. In fact, usually whatever you see on the above the ground is what you see below the ground, or even sometimes more. You see so many big branches and leaves above. Like that, there's an equally developed, in many cases, root structure beneath the ground. Thousands and thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands or millions of roots coming out of one tree. Like that, being in the material world, there's so many kinds of attachments which are binding us. Not one or two. There may be some very strong, superficial, what you can say, like the tap roots, the main predominant roots of attachment. And some which are the most, some attachments are great obstacles for our spiritual progress, especially those for sinful activities like eating meat, fish, or eggs, onion, garlic, eating, taking drugs or any other form of intoxication, then gambling. Gambling is another kind of addiction. Driving on the national interstate, we saw signs in Florida, you know any compulsive gamblers? We have a special Gamblers Anonymous or something like that, some association for helping impulsive gamblers. It's also a type of addiction. Everybody wants the fast buck, easy money, without working. So they spend their hard-earned money in a gamble, which they usually lose. Instead of gaining, they lose everything. Then, of course, there's the illicit sex, which is another sinful attachment. Krishna was very kind to give some system for human beings to have sex life within religious principles, within. Therefore, the institution of marriage was created so that people could fulfill those desires in an illicit manner. But desire is very strong for sex, and so and sometimes one is inclined to do so in an illicit manner. These are very gross, very strong, sinful attachments, which are very detrimental in our spiritual life. But apart from these obvious pillars of Kali, the spiritual progress is also depending upon our gradually neutralizing all the other subtle attachments, gross attachments that we have, and over a period of time transferring those to Krishna, or at least that Krishna's attachment is stronger than all the others, so that the main tap root becomes a Krishna consciousness. And if there are a few small other roots, those are not, even if those are cut or not cut, the tree is going to survive. Therefore, it doesn't matter. It may not even be necessary to cut those, as long as the Krishna root is the strongest. Sometimes, at different times, just to show that actually the Krishna root is stronger, maybe for some moment, different roots get cut and then they go back. But they're not the principal root that we're depending on our nourishment from. So in material life, we have our roots that we're depending on, the main nourishment, are the sense gratificatory roots. And if there's any religious root at all, it's probably one of the small feeder roots, not one of the main roots. But in Krishna consciousness, the main root is Krishna consciousness. And for the pure devotees, gradually all their roots start to spread. And Lord Chaitanya discussed about so many different devotees. In human society, friendship, family, love, these are very prominent attachments. But for the devotees, gradually their friends become the devotees. A pure devotee finds friends amongst the pure devotees. To do that, one has to be a bit humble. One can always find some defect in everyone and everything. But to see the good qualities in others, to recognize the good qualities in the devotees, their dedication, their selfless worship. Usually most people don't do much unless there's some direct reciprocation or direct material benefit for that. Many devotees are doing so many services without any material benefit. They're doing the service out of the desire to please Guru and Krishna. Therefore, they're so glorious. Even if there's a few percent or however many percent there might be of deficiencies in some areas, but the Bhagavatam explains that there may be a person who's got so many good qualities, but if he doesn't have devotional service or she doesn't have devotional service, ultimately all those qualities are for naught. They're all being used simply for some mundane purpose which really doesn't have any higher benefit. And as a result, even such good qualities, when push comes to shove or when it comes in some critical situation, they can all be discarded for one's own selfish interest. Actually, the great demons mentioned in the Bhagavad and Ramayana, it wasn't that they weren't very qualified persons. They're very qualified persons. Even Kamsa, he was very powerful, very charismatic, a great leader, a great very physically well-built, very strong, handsome. He was very intelligent. And he could be very kind and very gracious, very gentlemanly. When he was at the ceremony, the wedding ceremony of his sister, Devaki, he offered it's a custom that the brother accompanies the daughter up to the house of the husband. It's too much for the mother and father. They're feeling some loss of the daughter, because in the Vedic families, the daughter would always be with the parents until the wedding.
So they naturally, they feel very much affection for their daughter, and so they want to see that, well, the daughter safely reaches to her new home, and so they send a brother who's accustomed like that. But Kamsa, he could have just accompanied, and but instead he very graciously offered, let me drive the chariot. I'll drive you. And he was driving and smiling and talking and being, you know, a really wonderful, loving brother. Right? And all of a sudden there's this Devavani, you know. You're a sister, Devaki's eighth son, you know, will be the cause of your death or will kill you. As soon as he heard that, you know, all of a sudden his mood changed. And he started saying that this sister of mine, she's going to be the cause of my death. Her son is going to kill me. So immediately he grabbed her by the hair, pulled out his sword. He's going to kill her right on the spot. Just because your sister's son is going to be the cause of your death. Okay, I'll kill her right now. Finish all the danger. So where was all the gentlemanliness? Where was all the graciousness? Where was all the good qualities? Right? All in a second, everything disappeared. Of course, what was his motive? He was very much identified with his body. His body was going to get killed by the son of Devaki according to the Daivavani, the word from the sky. So he took this as, so he became immediately very fearful. And out of fear and anger, he wanted to kill his the object that was putting him in a fearful condition. So his motive was completely selfish and mundane. Sometimes someone may, like Lord Chaitanya, he's a little bit impatient here, and when he was discussing with Vallabha Bhatta, he was also very gently kind of admonishing him, type of very mild chastisement or instruction. Not to be proud, not to think oneself a great pundit, but try to learn the devotional qualities from other great devotees. We can gain something from every pure devotee, and he mentioned so many devotees, Shankar Pandit, Vasudev, Ghosh, Pradhar Pandit, Nityananda, and others, so many other devotees that get their association and learn from them their mood of devotion for the Lord. So, this humble Bhagavad Bhatta, he became interested to meet these devotees. And the neophyte devotee, they always see God, they don't see the other devotees. A little more advanced, they see God and their guru, and they don't see the other devotees. But the full Krishna conscious means to recognize the Supreme Lord, His one's own guru, and all the dear devotees of the Lord. But Lord Chaitanya, he sometimes would become impatient or angry with a devotee. But that wasn't for any selfish purpose, but that was because he was concerned about the spiritual advancement of the guru. Somehow, here Lord Chaitanya, he has no direct interest, but he's out of compassion, he's giving some instruction to Vasudeva, to Vallabha Bhatta. Sometimes in a personal relationship, there's a kind of possessiveness that comes, which is a natural, just like the parents feel, or the children, this is my child, the child is my parent. So then you have the possessiveness of the parent for the children, and the natural they feel responsibility, it's their duty, it's correct. But sometimes it may become excessive. Then you have the situation where then the children, they rebel. It's the opposite. Rebelling is an opposite of attachment, it's just the opposite, it's another form of attachment. It's a negative attachment. This is my parents, I'm rebelling against my parents.
is still focused on a particular person. This is another form of a material attachment. It's not the property. It's actually detrimental. Similarly, in the relationships between friends or between husband and wife, that type of possessiveness, attachment, which may later become anger. All these things happen. So we're best guided always by the Shastra. What does the Shastra say we're supposed to do? It's like the Shastra says that, well, one should respect one's parents and not do something disrespectful. What does the Shastra say? What are the duties of a husband? What are the duties of a wife? What is a real friend according to Shastra? Right? A mundane purpose, a real friend is someone who's like always with you in your sense gratification. But in the spiritual sense, a real friend is someone who can tell one even when they're doing something wrong. Vidura was a real friend of Dhritarashtra. He was a real brother. He told Dhritarashtra, you're not doing the right thing. You're always taking the side of your children, of your siblings, your children rather, because you want them to be the king or the emperor, so you're taking their side and you're not being just and fair with the sons of your brother, Pandu, the Pandavas. Even though they are more qualified than your own sons, and they're more highly qualified. But out of attachment, you're taking the side of your sons and you're not acting as a proper emperor or king in this regard, acting unjustly. And as a result, because your son's not qualified, he's misusing the affection you're giving him. He's creating so many problems. He really was giving a good instruction. And of course, Duryodhana, he couldn't take the criticism. He started chastising, saying this. Vidura is just like a dog, and this and that, and so many horrible things. And then Dhritarashtra, he didn't protest. He didn't say, oh, I didn't insult my brother. You should uncle, you have no right to say this. He didn't say anything, just silent. So Vidura, what's the use of staying here? I give a good instruction, I give. By my own nephew, I get the swords. And then my brother doesn't even stand up, at least the town to follow the normal etiquette. So I'm giving here some good instruction, none of these people can take it. I said, alright, you people want to see your own end. You want to be all finished, and I don't have to stay here and watch it. So that's why, in Krishna conscious relationships, one has to encourage someone when they do well, and consciousness, and one has to discourage or advise someone from doing something which is not correct or something which is not Krishna conscious. And both sides are there. In America, it seems, you know, the rugged individualism is a bad thing. But here we see that materially in a civilization, there's a lot of bonding that goes between the different members. And then you take that and spiritually, there's a lot of bonding. So much attachment that grows for Krishna and for his devotees. Lord Chaitanya is very much attached to his devotees. But not in a mundane sense, but in a higher spiritual sense, he loves them and appreciates all of their service. So by doing devotional service, the right type of attachment grows, and the wrong kind of attachment is cut. That's vairagya. Not that we should be detached from serving Krishna, that's not vairagya. I'm very detached. I don't need to do any devotional service. That's not detachment, that's maya. We can never be without some form of attachment. So either we're attached to Krishna or we're attached to maya. Either looking at the sun, if you look away, you're looking in the shadow.
So here we have Kamsa, where to relieve him off, he was ready to cut off the head of his wife, his sister. Then Vasudeva was saying, my dear sir, this doesn't look very good for you. I mean, what are people going to say here in public? Just to be decapitating a sister. I mean, it would really be kind of a disgraceful thing. And since Kamsa was ultimately also very concerned about his, you know, reputation, how people thought of him, he should, you know. But still, when it came to life and death, you know, okay, a little bit of bad reputation we could tolerate, but, you know, it's like, finish her off and I'll save myself. But then he said, well, look, after all, I mean, she's not the one who's going to kill you. And so why kill her? Okay, well, that's, you know, I'm going to lose my reputation. Plus, she's not the one. Still, her sons are going to be the ones. So if I kill her, there's no children, then I'm saved. And then Vasudeva said, look, I'll tell you what, I'll give you the children as soon as they're born. And do with them whatever you want. So Vasudeva was very famous for being a very honest person. He was a devotee. Devotees are forthright, honest, character. And if another demon had told Kamsa, I'll give you, you know, I can't trust this guy, he's a demon. But even the demon knew Vasudeva is a devotee. What he says, he's going to do it. So then he said, well, if I get the babies and what's the fear, I can always finish them off. So then he didn't, and he released his sister. What a close call. You know. So the demons, if you even can, rely on demons. So that's what's happening in the world today, right? There's so many people who look really good. But what are they really made out of? If they're not devotees, if they don't have that devotional quality, they can become kamsas in a second. And that's what people are seeing, you know, that many of the leaders get exposed to different white gate, water gate, this gate, that, different things, different kind of exposés and accusations. Of course, sometimes they may be true or false, or they may not be the important things. Prabhupada actually didn't really consider it very wrong for a head of state to spy on his competitors. I mean, in Vedic time, that was like part of the course. We had to know what your competitors were doing. But, of course, anyway, he lied. There were ethical problems. So, whatever it may be, that whatever the rules of the game are in the particular, maybe by Vedic standard there was nothing wrong, but there's different rules in this country, had to play by the rules. And the people try to bend the rules for their own personal gratification or aggrandizement, actually the people are going to say, well, this person was not a character person. So there's the nature of attachment that forces us to do things we don't want to do. And from attachment, when we don't get what we want, and we don't, then we reverse to negative attachment, which is a false type of renunciation. We'll become angry and start to reject things. This vairagya is not just the angry rejection of things that we liked before and now they don't give us what we want, so now we hate them. Vairagya means a real detachment, both positive and negative, and a total attachment to Krishna. When we're attached to Krishna, then, alright, if it happens, if it doesn't happen, it's like it's not an issue then. Like someone, if they love someone materially, then you think, oh, I want to make this person happy. But it's kind of also dependent on that person makes me happy. Like that person no longer makes me happy is actually an obstacle in my happiness. Then that same love gets, so-called love gets turned to hate. I want to cause that person suffering. If I can cause that person suffering, then it's like, make me happy. All this is the mundane two sides of the same attachment point. But this is not vairagya. Maybe someone thinks I'm detached. But that's not detached. Detachment means when we're really attached to Krishna. And that's our interest. So someone can, then this creates problems. And people, you know, they that neophyte devotees think, what does this mean? Then I shouldn't be attached to my family. So I should, like, if I neglect my family, that shows I'm really detached. Or something like that, some kind of speculative reaction. So first of all, we shouldn't independently try to be detached by any kind of superficial method, because it'll all be artificial. We should try to be attached to Krishna and do our devotional service, and everything works out very nicely. We automatically become detached. And rather, how we can, everything we do it as a devotional service. Husband can protect his wife, thinking that she's a devotee. Krishna has given this devotee to help me in my devotional service, to be my a devotional companion and to raise Krishna conscious children. Me protect my wife, as if this is protecting a devotee, guiding a devotee. And vice versa, the wife can consider, oh, this is my husband's a devotee. By serving him, I'm serving Krishna. Krishna is pleased that I serve a Vaishnava. So it's important for people to be married to Krishna conscious spouses. Then it's very easy to see. Of course, one can even, someone who may not be so Krishna conscious, sometimes the husband may be very Krishna conscious, but he may be a good husband. Then it's that even then a wife could think, well, Krishna is the supreme protector of everyone. He's a shelter of everyone. So, at least materially, my spiritually, at least materially, my husband is protecting me. Whereas then the people, you know, I'm going to get further from this analogy. For the non-ideal situations, where people don't fulfill their duties, but we'll take this to the ideal situation. To show how it is possible, even in a material situation, to be Krishna conscious, even while appearing to be attached. And even there may be some attachment that comes, it's natural. But the crucial issue is that the real attachment should be to Krishna, to fulfilling whatever the desires of Krishna are. In some cases, maybe even the situation is not so ideal, but a person will do that which is more Krishna conscious, even if it means some inconvenience to oneself. So the strength to do that, to tolerate the unideal situations or to adapt to the different situations, that comes because of the desire to please Krishna. Krishna, I reckon, all that this person is doing because they want to please me. Vairagyam Gyanam. Spiritual knowledge. That's very difficult to get spiritual knowledge. So many people, big pundits, even they read the scriptures, but they cannot get the spiritual knowledge. It's like it's a block. Even you tell something to someone and they memorize the words, but then somehow it doesn't always penetrate. Just reading the books is not enough. So to get the spiritual knowledge, Lord Chaitanya recommends that we should be serving the Vaishnavas. We should be learning by associating with the Vaishnavas. Here, it is when Vasudeva Bhagavati, just serving the Lord. But the best way of serving the Lord is by serving His devotees. He's more pleased when we serve His devotees. And some may get worried and think, well, I want to realize Krishna. And if I do all this devotional service, how will I realize Krishna? But here it's saying, Brahma Darshanam, you realize this absolute truth. Jagannath Das Babaji, he was a realized soul. He realized Krishna, Radha and Krishna. He achieved the highest realization of his Siddha Sarup. Sarup Rupa Lava. That's why he's on a Siddhar, Jagannath Das Babaji. It's not common that people living in this world can realize their own spiritual form. Even amongst devotees, it's very rare. Usually, at the time of death, people realize, I mean, pure devotees may realize their eternal form. Even Narada Muni, he realized his own spiritual form after leaving his body, simultaneously with leaving his body. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the
point is to realize yourself, realize your relationship to Krishna. But if somebody realizes while they're living, well, that's a very wonderful thing. Jagannath Das Babaji was a siddha. He had realized his sarupa, his own spiritual form, as that eternal associate of Radha and Krishna. Now, so he was very famous. So one devotee came, he was serving another Vaishnava. One devotee came and said, I took initiation and my guru is engaging me in the deity worship and washing the pots and then making the flower garlands and then picking the flowers and sweeping the floor and doing all these kinds of services, but I know that you're a siddha. You have realized your sarup, so I want you to teach me the higher, so I can directly sit and meditate on Radha Krishna pastimes. I won't have to do all these other menial services. And Jagannath Das Babaji said, go back and do those services. By doing those services, you're going to get purified and you'll become, by that, by doing the devotional service in a humble state of mind, that's how you're going to achieve your realization. It's not that you're going to get realization by sitting and speculating about it. Even by practically doing the devotional service, it comes automatically. That's why we call the people who give up the practical devotional service and just imagine that they're already on the elevated platform to be sadhya, to take the whole thing cheap. If I just imagine that I'm an associate of Krishna, then I'm an associate. I mean, in the material world, if you just imagine you were Napoleon, people would put you in a straitjacket. But in spiritual life, people, if I just imagine that I'm Radharani, then I'm Radharani, something like that. I imagine that I'm such and such a gopi. If I imagine I'm a peacock in Vrindavan. But that's not the procedure that's recommended by the Goswamis, recommended by the Bhagavatam. We can mentally do services, but we shouldn't mentally already think that we're in a particular rasa in a way which is not authorized by the sadhu, shastra, and guru. But by doing practical devotional service, naturally this our rasa, our sarupa, all the secrets and mysteries of devotional service can be revealed. So this is known as Brahma Darshan, and it's all-encompassing. If you realize Krishna, you also realize his effulgence, which is the Brahman. Brahman means also absolute truth. Brahma also means all the aspects of absolute truth. So some they refer to Brahman only as the impersonal aspect. But Brahman, in the generic, in the general sense, means all, means the absolute. So Brahma Darshana means realization of the spiritual reality. So a devotee needs to have that type of conviction and confidence. By doing devotional service, I will achieve everything that I need. I'll achieve everything. If one doesn't have that confidence, I will just being taken to someone's house in Alachua, and the instructions were not very clear. What happened actually, the instructions were alright, but there the roads have got two numbers. They have got a county number, county road number so and so. But then recently they'd also put little street numbers, like street number 141 or something. And sometimes the county number and the street number were not the same. So this person had lost his way several times in my visit there, so I wanted to be sure he got the instructions right. So it said on the map there's going to be a church, a cemetery, and it'll be on road 241. So I looked and said, this is road 141, it's sure on the street sign. Sure you got the right road. And because he was habitual getting lost person. So then all of a sudden he got real paranoid. So maybe I took a wrong turn. But then as we were driving, we saw that there was the church. It's about, okay, maybe the numbers. At least something was, let's see if we... He said, no, I want to turn around. I'm sure I made the wrong turn. You know, I got all like paranoid and made the wrong turn. But then there was the cemetery. I said, let's shoot for it, even though the number's wrong. We got the church and the cemetery. We're doing pretty good. He said, no, it must be the wrong road. It must be there because he just got lost all self-confidence. You know, and I said, no, anyway, let's go for it. And we went, took the right turn that the map said, and sure enough, there was the house we were looking for. And we tried to find out what was wrong, why the map had the wrong, and he said, oh, the county number of that road was this number, but the street number, they just put on a new street number, so didn't know, I forgot about that. So the person doesn't have confidence. I mean, it was within 10 feet of the turn, he wanted to turn around. He said, lost the confidence, I can't make it. This is not the right way. Even if it was the right way, you know, maybe the direction wasn't 100% clear. But my point, this whole funny example, is how if we lose our confidence, we may be so close to Krishna, but if we lose the confidence in devotional service, we could turn around right next to the goal. And until you get Brahma Darshan, until you reach Krishna, it's difficult to know how far away you are or how close you might be. Once you realize Krishna, then you're that type of darkness or ignorance. It's like, you know, if you're in the dark, right, until you get out of the dark, you're in the dark. Right? You're never exactly able to see anything. How far away you are from the light, there's some road side, there's some indications, but dark is dark. There's no light in the dark, right? So as soon as you turn the light on, as soon as you get out of the dark into the light, then everything changes. It's a whole different picture. So one of the obstacles is that neophyte devotees, even sometimes advanced devotees, they give up their confidence in the process of devotional service. But if I just stick to devotional service, I'll achieve all success. And even they get very close, so they're actually making advancement, but because of something or another, some thing that makes them lose their confidence. Maybe someone said something or something happened or the weakness of mind or something. Suddenly they just lose that conviction. And even though they may be very close to the destination, they turn around and head back. We were bathing in a spring, also in Mira Lachua, and there's some caves, underwater caves that you see all the scuba divers going down and going into these caves. And someone mentioned how just recently there's signs everywhere, dangerous caves, go at your own risk, people have died here. Said how one person had gone in there and somehow got lost from the, they put a wire in there, like some kind of a lifeline. Somehow got detached from the lifeline and, said he was in there, wrote a whole letter to his family, I don't know, 2-page letter underwater. And he perished there in the cave. I said it was just a few feet from the line. Another, you know, 3-4 minutes he could, the time he spent, you know, in writing, could have easily got to the line. But like he gave up. He was headed, you know, and it seemed to be headed in the right direction. A little bit he would have got to light. Instead he just said, it's hopeless, I can't do it. So he wrote him a letter, you know, or whatever he wrote, some message to his loved ones. So devotional service is the supreme kind of spiritual marathon. We just go as much as we can to the very, you know, last breath. In fact, the last breath is the most important. That's the one, especially the women who say Hare Krishna, the last one. Because Krishna said, if you say, remember me at the time of leaving your body, you'll come to me. So the most important one is the last one. And after the last breath, then it's all right. After the So when we enter into devotional service, it means it's to the sweet end, bitter end, whatever it is, to the very end. And of course, in Krishna consciousness, the end isn't bitter, it's sweet. It might be very bitter right before the end, but the end is sweet because if we're thinking of Krishna, we go back to Krishna. So it's very important not to lose that confidence. And that's why these verses are very important, because they're telling us that what is the nature of devotional service. If we stay to the devotional service, we don't need to deviate into speculative knowledge, fruitive activity, or anything else. We stay to devotional service and we'll achieve all success. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any question? Look at Shwari Devi Dasi.
When you were discussing that, the process of self-realization, how we have to realize our real position, is it kind of like bogus self-realization if one comes to realize more about their conditioned life? I guess they come to realize more about their capacity or more honest about what they can and cannot do, what they like or dislike. Is that, do you know what I mean? Like in some kind of, if sometimes a devotee or a non-devotee comes to understand, I guess I have these limitations, is it kind of a mental thing, but then is it not like directly related to service of the Lord?
So we have a guru to find out in each individual case whether something is in a mental platform or whether it's inspired by Krishna. Sometimes I wrote a letter to Prabhupada proposing something. Prabhupada said, I think you're overworking, you don't rest. It's not that the guru only says, let me take a break, take a little rest, you're overworking. It's like, maybe some devotees' tendency is to workaholic. The guru has to tell them to take it easy, spend a little time chanting and reading or something. But someone may be a sleepaholic or something, I don't know, maybe whatever, some kind of holic. And the guru may have to say something else. The biggest problem comes when people start to take their mind as their guru. Mind is not reliable. Mind can always mislead us. We try to figure things out with our intelligence based upon what the guru has instructed. And if the intelligence is not sure that whether, if there's any doubt, we're not completely sure that what we're doing is correct, and the guru is on the planet, then there's no reason of remaining in doubt, and we should be taking his instruction, finding out whether our idea is correct or not. If we get the sanction, then it's all right. If we don't get the sanction, if we get some other instruction, then well, we know what we got a question answered. You see, a lot of devotees at the beginning in devotional ready and submissive, enthusiastic, but then after some time, it's like here, we read earlier about one great pandit. He said, I know, I'm like no devotional service, I'm a great devotee, I understood the scripture. And they start relying upon sadhu and guru. They're just relying on their understanding of shastra. But that was a big pandit. Of course, then you have devotees, they don't know shastra, and they're just not even relying on shastra, they're relying on their own sentiment at that moment. So their own rationale, their own logic. Logic is not even a very weak friend. Many times, it's a tool, but it's not the way to know the absolute truth. If someone is using shastra, at least logically trying to understand shastra, Even then, Lord Chaitanya said that's not the ideal way of practicing devotion. You should learn from the other devotees and from your spiritual master. But if a person doesn't even use shastra, but just trying to use logic, he said, well, I mean, after all, I'm a human being, these are my limitations, and my foot up, okay, I start to define what I can do with it. And really, you know, I started devotional service when I was young and idealistic, but in reality, I really have a lot of desires, and, you know, okay, let's just be realistic about everything and dive into sense gratification in it. In a moral way, something that's who I am. I come, you know, your mind can take you anywhere. It's called Manoraj, the mental chariot. Using that kind of logic, you know, you could, you know, it usually goes step by step. You get one point, and from there, you know, just like how you start having bingo on the temples again. You can do anything. If you're not more down to the Shastra and to the Guru and to the Vaishnavas. So if one does feel, okay, this is a physical or mental or some kind of limitation that I'm experiencing. Is this just a challenge that I have to overcome? How do I overcome? Everything is like a challenge. It's the new buzzword. You don't think of them as obstacles, but they're just challenges. How to deal with that challenge. That's why we take advice from the Vaishnavas, from the Guru, to do things in accordance with Shastra. That's why Krishna appreciated Arjuna. He was trying to do the right thing, but he didn't really have enough knowledge, so he was saying things which weren't really tenable, but he was trying to think of what, according to scripture, what was the right thing. Scripturally, it's not right for someone to kill their guru or kill their brothers, so I shouldn't do this. But those scriptures are very low level of moral scriptures. And Krishna was saying there's a higher principle here. That even if your brother and your teacher of martial arts, even though they're all respectable personalities, but if actually they're on the side of your religion, then for the sake of religion, even if they're killed, it's not a sin. Things like that. So I mean, there's scripture is so vast that one may, in one a particular code may apply in a certain circumstance, but in other circumstances it might not apply. There may be a higher principle that is more applicable. So when we figure things out according to Shastra, if it's not been confirmed yet by Guru, and by the devotees. Sometimes you go to the devotees and then they tell you three different things. You don't know which. Okay, now it's really confusing. Right? Then you finally go to the guru, is the one, because he has to take the responsibility. The guru, some devotee may say, well, I think it's like this, someone says, I think it's like that. Ultimately, they're not responsible. They may be responsible to the extent that they told you their wrong idea. If you follow it, if it's the wrong idea, then they'll be responsible. But they're not responsible for you. They're just responsible for their own actions. But the guru, the Diksha guru, he is responsible for the disciple. Even if the disciple doesn't follow the Diksha guru, he's also responsible. And if you follow him. That's why we take a guru. But sometimes devotees make decisions which are very major decisions affecting their whole course in life. And then they say, why didn't you ask me about that? Oh, I didn't want to bother you. But if they take another birth, it's certainly going to be a big botheration for the guru. Right? What could be a bigger botheration? There may be many minor details that someone is having difficulty relating with other individuals, or even the husband, wife may have some detail, may have some bad or something how to better relate with each other as individuals. Just that maybe, so then it's better, okay, discuss with a senior grihastha, probably used to say, because I'm a sannyasi, I can get into all the nitty gritty. But someone decides, okay, I want to completely renounce my family life, I want to change my whole situation. They shouldn't do things that are so major without consulting with higher authority. Or if the situation is very great, and the guru, senior Vaishnavas are there. Even Prabhupada, not that he neglected, he said, okay, this situation you can discuss with a senior Vaishnava. In some cases, it was a series that he would also directly give some advice. It's not that he never gave advice, but if it wasn't that serious, then he preferred that. If it was just matters dealing with the details of family life, that's a family member, family disciple. In fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, he had assigned the whole hierarchy of upadeshas, which I raised in to the disciples that we can have this, but I think it wasn't discussed in Atlanta. The idea that there should be amongst the disciples, that some disciples will be established in the future as spiritual elder brothers and sisters or whatever, elder prabhus to help the younger devotees. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saitakura had that as upadeshaks. Upadeshak means advisor, counsel, instructor. Different meanings of that upadeshak. So for the brahmacharis, he would have upadeshaks and the sannyasis. And for the married, he had different upadeshaks. And then amongst, after a while, there were many upadeshaks, and those who became more experienced in counseling and helping the younger devotees, then he gave them a promotion and made them mahopadeshaks. Great instructors, bigger instructors, bigger counselors. And after a while, amongst all those mahopadeshaks, then he appointed very select one or two, few, I don't know exactly the number, but it's not very select, became mahopadeshak. So if you wanted to come with a personal problem, you couldn't go directly to the guru first, under normal circumstances. You first had to go through a upadeshak, mahopadeshak, and finally, and then if you were referred, you know, it's like sometimes like you phone up a computer technical, you know, first thing how a person answers the phone is like, must be like a rookie or general, just kind of, they kind of go through a few basic things, and did you turn your machine on, did you know, is it plugged in right, has it got this, and you know, they kind of check over all the normal things. Then you go through that, and then you start getting into some really, you know, what your problem is, it's really complicated, they say, well, look, I'll tell you what. Hold on, I'm going to trance you over. This is your RA number, you know, so and so. Then they trance you up to, you know, there must be about 50, I don't know how many, you know, just a whole number of first level. And then you get referred to, you know, the higher, and then that person solves your problem in many cases very quickly. Even the phone I had, you know, that get right to the root of the issue and solve it. The other one was just kind of spinning the wheels for a while. But I guess most people's problems might easily get solved even by the first phase. In some cases, you get to the situation where even the second phase, they can't solve your problem, and they tell you, listen, that's when they actually give you the RE now. I was giving you the number, send it in. Yeah, look at this one. So, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, he had that system just for the spiritual advice. Prabhupada, he kind of combined that between his temple presidents and GBCs. They were all his disciples. Now in his time there's many different gurus, and sometimes some of the administrators are very interested in the spiritual, you know, they're all interested in the spiritual level, but some might not be able to represent the guru as transparently as others. So that's why I'm considering that it might be even useful to have amongst the particular guru disciples this type of upadeshak, counselor, system. Of course, if the temple president is very, maybe the temple president in some cases, maybe not even have to be the same disciple as the guru. If a person is considered to be reliable, to give transparent counsel. I know some nephews, spiritual nephews, I could declare as upadeshak. I have that kind of confidence. There's some people I may not have that confidence, even they might be my godbrothers. I might not think that they would give an advice which is transparent, although it might be Krishna conscious in some respects. But it may not be the thing that's going to really give the help to the disciple that they're looking for. So anyway, there's all these kind of facilities that were there. The bottom line is that whether through an assistant of the guru, if we get ourselves impelled, it's the guru, but he's just worked through someone, or directly through the guru. But we had to get some advice to confirm whether what our decision is correct or not, if it's such a major decision that it is affecting our whole direction of devotional service. So it sends my flags off. This, you know, when I realize my limitation, what I really am, and sometimes you hear people say, I'm not a pure devotee. I can't really be a pure devotee. So therefore, it's like someone saying, I missed the codicil, so anyway, since I broke it, I might as well eat grains the rest of it anyway. But that's not the principle. If you break a codicil accidentally and you realize it, it doesn't mean you go on eating sin the rest of the day. You continue to follow a codicil as soon as you have realized your error. And again, you do another codicil a couple of days later, or you do the Nirjala codicil. So we follow devotional service, we get Brahma Darshana. We get Ahaituki Vairagyam Gyanam. How it happened, we can't figure it out. But now suddenly our brain has become so smart that we figure it out that I really can't be a pure devotee by devotional service. I'm not ready for it. That's Maya. But how, to what extent we can do devotional service? That, what type of devotional service? This is the thing that Guru can guide. But you see, people take this logic first as what kind of devotional service I can or can't do. You put those limited, then from there it becomes whether I can even do devotional service. In a pure manner. So many Prabhupada disciples are in a very critical situation, right? So the Prabhupada is not available in the same way that he was before to directly answer the question. Through other senior God brother, God sister, to some extent, through his books. But when the guru is no longer on the planet, the disciple is really has a much more introspective and trying to remember what the guru's instructions. So now Prabhupada disciples have that difficulty. Many of them have decided, they come to some rational decision about their limitations. And they have left devotional service eventually. Or reduce their devotional output to practically a minuscule quantity, rather than really pacing themselves and making the best use of whatever bad bargain they happen to find themselves in. So I remember one time a devotee came to Prabhupada and was very long-faced. So why are you unhappy? He said, you have no right to be unhappy in the presence of your guru. I order you to be happy. The order of the guru, you must be happy. So if the guru is not here, then you might be unhappy. But I'm here, so any question, any problem, I'm here to solve it. No need of staying in any kind of confusion. Hare Krishna.